4. So last week, it was sort of a family reunion. And we went through that and we saw the difference between Jacob before he wrestled the angel and after he wrestled the angel. And he introduced his family. He met his brother. And an interesting thing happened. They hugged. Now, what you don't hear about last week in that entire story is they never talked about the incident that took place around 20 years ago. And I heard a pastor saying this, and it's true that a hug can speak louder than words can. Because, that's right, Phil, but not now. Because when they did hug, remember what he said. Esau ran to him and put his arms around him, and they kissed and they cried. In that moment, they forgave each other. In that moment, nothing needed to be said. They knew what happened, but the hug was needed. The restoration was there. And it reminds us that God is in back of us and in ahead of us. He surrounds us. The Holy Spirit is with us, working on both ends. And when they did hug, that's all it was. He worked on Jacob's heart, and he also worked on Esau's heart in the same time. And that is the wonderful thing about our God, because you don't have to worry. We don't see everything, but we know he's working. And that is a beautiful thing. And you don't have to worry, because he will set the path straight. He will make things right. They did wrestle. He did wrestle with him, but they're friends. Now, it looked like he was leaving his brother, but as we talked about, I'm going to put this up right now. He was going to Shechem, and he was going to meet his brother later on, because he had to establish some booths for his animals. And Shechem is the place that's squared off in the red. After he met his brother, he moved a little bit, and now he's in Shechem, and we're going to look at that a little bit later. Whoops. There we go. So we're going to begin in chapter 34, verse 1. Now Dinah, I'm sorry, you know what? Let's go back a little bit more. Let's go to 33, verse 19. Because this actually goes together. And he brought the parcel of land, because he came into the city of Shechem safely, where he had pitched his tent, from the children of Hamor, Shechem's father. He pitched his tent. Let me do that again. 19. And he bought the parcel of land, there we go, where he had pitched his tent, from the children of Hamor, Shechem's father, for 100 pieces of money, and he named it El Elohim Israel, the mighty God of Israel. So he's in that land right now, and that goes together more with chapter 34. So now we'll go into chapter 34, verse 1. Now Dinah, the daughter of Leah, whom she had born to Jacob, went out to see the daughters of the land. And when Shechem, the son of Hamor, the Hivite, prince of the country, saw her, he took her and lay with her and violated her. His soul was strongly attracted to Dinah, the daughter of Jacob, and he loved the young woman and spoke kindly to the young woman. So here they are in this new land. Jacob buys some property from Shechem, the son of Hamor, the Hivite. And the Hivites were the sixth generation of the descendants of Canaan back in Genesis 9, the sons of Ham, Shem, and Japheth. So Hivite people are descendants of Canaan, Ham's son. Got it? Good. and a reminder of that, because this is actually prophecy being fulfilled at this point and later on. In Genesis 9:25, Noah says, "Cursed be Canaan, a servant of servants will he be, or the lowest of slaves will he be to his brothers." So as we move on into Genesis 34, it starts. And it continues on into Joshua 9, where you see they become the lowest of servants, because Joshua orders the Hivites of Gibeon to collect wood and carry water for the temple of God. So here are these people which Noah cursed, when was it, 1,000 years ago or whatever? Long time ago. And it starts here. And remember what he did. He starts off, the man saw her, And she went out to the daughters of the land. In other words, she was there and she started making friends with the people around her. There's always a danger in that. She was a young maiden and she went out to check out the land. And she made some friends. But it also says that he violated her. And we're going to look at this portion a little bit more into detail and look at another story also. There's different translations that are said. If you were to look at the NLT, it says he seized her and raped her. But then he fell in love with her. And he tried to win her affection with tender words. Now, I've never known anyone to rape anyone and then fall in love with someone. And we have a story that's contrary, but there's the same implication there. In the NSA, they translated that he forced her. ESV says he humiliated her. And then if you look at the Tanakh, Old Testament, the entire Old Testament by the Jewish Publication Society, they also say he forced her. So we're going to go a little bit more into what is happening. Did he rape her? Did he not rape her? Because it said he loved her. So we're going to open our Bibles to 2 Samuel 13. And it's going to be a familiar story to you. We're going to look at some familiar words. 2 Samuel chapter 13. And we're going to read 11 to 12. Okay, you guys there? Okay, we're going to start off in verse 11. Now when she had brought them into him to eat, he took hold of her and said to her, "Come lie with me, my sister." But she answered him, "No, my brother, do not force me, for no such thing should be done in Israel. Do not do this disgraceful thing. And I, where could I take my shame? And as for you, you would be like one of the fools in Israel. Now, therefore, please speak to the king," which is King David right now, "for he will not withhold me from you." So in there, she says, go talk. Even though we're half brother and sisters, it's okay. Verse 14, "However, he would not heed her voice. And being stronger than she, he forced her and lay with her." And there's another word, force. "Then Ammon hated her exceedingly, so that the hatred with which he had for her was greater than the love which he loved her. And Ammon said to her, 'Arise, be gone.' She said to him, 'No, indeed, this evil of sending me away is worse than the other that you did to me.'" So it's pretty clear now. She's saying, okay, you forced me. It is a rape. Don't send me away. But he would not listen to her. Then he called his servants who attended him and said, "Here, put this woman out away from me and bolt the door behind me." Now she had on a robe of many colors, for the king's virgin daughters wore such apparel. And his servant put her out and bolted the door behind her. But Tamar put ashes on her head and tore her robe and of many colors that was on her and laid her hand on her head and went away crying bitterly. But Absalom, her brother, said to her, "Has Ammon, your brother, been with you?" So he knew that he liked her somehow. "Been with you. But now hold your peace, my sister. He is your brother. Do not take this thing to heart." So Tamar remained desolate in her brother Absalom's home. But when King David heard of all these things, he was very angry. And Absalom spoke to his brother Ammon neither good nor bad, for Absalom hated Ammon because he forced his sister Tamar. Now, there's similarities here because you see David getting very angry, but in the end, he really didn't do nothing. And we understand the sin that David did that sort of changed him, almost humbled him or made him docile to an extreme point. So if you're looking at the words here, we're going to go back to Genesis. Here, it's pretty obvious, even though the word means the same here, that it was an extreme force. It was a rape. And she said, no, she said, just go to my father. He will give me to you. He did her a really bad thing. He said he loved her, but it was mostly love, obviously, because afterwards he threw her out and he didn't love her at all. So it was a rape issue right there. Now, I want to look at another, I'm going to put up a slide here so we could understand the word that we're talking about. So when we're looking at the word violated, I tried my best to get it as large as possible, but it's pretty difficult. So when we're looking at this version, and you see all the words right there? It can mean a lot of different things. It's translated, if I have it up here, I think I took it out, 84 occurrences in the Bible. And it's translated different ways depending on the context. You see, I highlighted or put a triangle, that's not a triangle, a rectangle around force. So, okay, it's force. But in this context, it seems to be more be humbled, mishandled. You see where it says to humble, be humiliated, weaken oneself, to humble oneself. And I took that from Strong. So what did he do? It seemed like he seduced her. Now remember, she had friends, and it says Hamor saw her. But does seduction mean that it's generally not a rape? Because you know we hear about date rapes as well. But if you look at the bottom, it says, what is to be seduced? And the first one says, to be persuaded to disobedience or disloyalty. To lead astray, usually by persuasion or false promises. To carry out a physical seduction of, entice to sexual intercourse. And then it says entice someone into sexual intercourse, attract someone to a belief or into a course of action that is inadvisable or foolhardy. So I'm gonna read it again so we could get it clear. Dinah went out. She went to go see some friends that she made while they were living there, which seems to be a normal thing. She's a young girl. Remember that she was the only daughter out of all of the family. The Bible doesn't tell us that there were any more girls, just her. So it's natural for a young woman, a young, maybe she was 19, 18, 16, more like 16 years old, to go out. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about my culture, and it makes more sense. And this is also a cultural thing, which you have to think about. When I looked at that, you have to remember, in their times, there was no dating. There was secret dating. And in my culture, the way it is, you don't go out with another gypsy guy and a gypsy girl. You secretly meet and date. And then they can fall in love and do a lot of bad things. But getting back to seduction. Seduction can still be rape. Understand it. If the girl doesn't want it, but you can coerce someone and give them promises. Now that happens. My culture does the same thing. A boy and a girl meet secretly. A lot of times they do things they shouldn't, and they wind up in problems, in trouble. And the girl gives in to what the guy says. Now, we know there's a lot of stories out there where young girls, 13, 14, 15, 16, and 18, a guy comes to them and says, baby, I love you. Yeah, we're going to get married. Just come on. No, let's do it now. Don't you understand? I love you. You're the only one. Guys and girls are different in the way they think. And a girl can believe that, okay, this guy's going to be with me. But she did wrong. And to a degree, he forced her. Because seduction, to a degree, is force. Now, it's similar but not. Would you see what happened to Ammon and his daughter Tamar? She said, don't do this. You're being foolish. This is ridiculous. It shouldn't be done in Israel. In other words, this is really wrong. And it says he forced her. He was stronger than her. Here it says he took her. So it seems like it was a seduction. She didn't really want to do it, but she did. And that happens more than you would think to a lot of girls. And in the end, it is a form of rape. Because you've seduced someone. Whether they may have felt passion and whether they enjoyed it or not, it's an odd thing when you're doing stuff contrary to what we should be doing. We understand dating is a thing we do. There was no dating in the Bible. People come together and meet and they arrange marriages. So far, we've seen the arrangements of marriages. But that's a modern thing. And if you're going to date, somehow you will fall into sin. One person will, because you're testing yourself. She went out there, possibly, and this is another viewpoint, possibly she saw him, he saw her, they started meeting quietly. Those friends she had would bring them together, because that's what our culture does. You would have cousins, family members talk to another cousin and girl and say, okay, we'll meet you here at this time. And then the two would meet. they would do stuff that they shouldn't do. And the next thing you know, they can either get in trouble or not, but they would never have sex because you have to prove virginity. And it has to be proven before, if you're going to give a certain amount of money in my culture. It's a dowry or it's some type. But here, the other thing we do, and you're going to see this here, I'll talk about it a little bit when we get there. If we get there, we're not going to finish this chapter. I thought we would, but we're not. So are you tracking with me before I move on? You have to understand the culture of the time. This is not American culture we're talking about. It's different. She had some friends. She went out with them. The prince saw. She's hot. I like her. Hey, you girl, go tell her. Oh, he's a king. She may have been flattered. There's no one around. She was mixed up with bad company. And the thing is, where was her brothers as well? Why did they let her go? Well, they had to establish some form of relationship with the people there. Because you shouldn't just let your daughter go by herself. We don't do that. If a young girl goes out, someone has to chaperone her. Either the brother or other girls. But when all the girls go out, that's when they generally meet. So you can't trust them. And you have to understand there is no such thing as dating. You don't do that back then. You don't do that still now in other countries. We don't do that in my culture. It's a little bit different now. Clearly, I don't follow my culture because I married a black woman. Hi, wife. And obviously, we dated. But that is a modern thing. It's not a biblical principle. See, it's difficult. And that's another thing maybe we can get into one of these days. I mean, we know back in what, the 1800s, 1900s, we have chaperones, right? They would go together. What was it? The mother or an aunt would allow them to go, like, I don't know, what is it, 50 feet, 20 feet ahead as they're talking and getting to know each other. But as everything progresses, it gets worse, and we don't guard ourselves. To a degree, Dinah didn't guard herself. Her family didn't do a good job of guarding her, and this happened. They were too busy doing their own thing. Remember this family line. Remember how we all have issues with communication, ourselves, and Jacob is doing his thing. She's the only girl, and she wants friends. That's normal. Wouldn't you say? If you have an only girl, she's going to go have friends, but as a parent, and if you have big brothers like we would do, like I would do for my younger sisters, where are you going? Who are you talking to? What are you doing? We used to do that all the time. Girls were seriously, no, no, no. Because you're protecting their honor is what it's about. That's really what it's about back then. And we would do that. So a little bit more about my culture later on. So where was we? He violated her, but he talked to her kindly. And he might have said something. Dinah might have been like this. What have I done? Why did I listen to you? Why did we do this? This wasn't the way we should have done this. And he was like, no, 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 you don't understand. I love you. I care for you. He may have felt guilt because he loved her. He cared for her. Who, if it was a relationship, how long did it go on? We don't know. But the other side is we also know that they would take women sometimes and take them to their houses if they didn't have a family and if they were single. But they knew Jacob. They sold them land. There was some type of relationship. That's why my standpoint is he seduced her. But again, in that, it could be a form of rape, and it was regret. And he tried to comfort her because she lost her honor. Or she allowed herself, whoops, she allowed herself to be weakened. And she was humiliated or humbled. Do you get the idea of what it's saying now? And she regrets it. And there's a lot of people who regret giving up their virginity before they should. But here it's even worse because it's the family honor. So verse 4. So Shechem spoke to his father Hamor, saying, get me this young woman as a wife. And Jacob heard that he had defiled Dinah, his daughter. Now his sons were with his livestock in the field. So Jacob held his peace until they came. Then Hamor, the father of Shechem, went out to Jacob to speak with him. And the sons of Jacob came in from the field when they heard it, and the men were grieved and very angry, because he had done a disgraceful thing in Israel by laying with Jacob's daughter, a thing which not ought to be done. You hear the same language in Genesis as we just read in 2 Samuel, because it is disgraceful. It shouldn't be done. You should never take a virgin and deflower her, as the saying goes, before she is married. You bring dishonor to her and to the family. And, well, the way God made it. So he wants this girl. And what he's doing again is something we do in our culture. He made a mistake and he's saying, Father, go get her. I love her. I want her to be my wife. We don't know if he had any other wives or not. We don't know if she was number one. But it's common to have more than one wife in those times, as we've looked already. But it says here, Jacob held his peace and he found out. We don't know how he found out. We don't know if a servant came or Dinah came back. We don't know actually the time frame, if it was the days or the same day. But someone told him. And as we read on, we're going to see that Dinah is actually in Shechem's house. So it's possible that it happened in the same day or maybe the next. I would say if it was the same day, they wouldn't ask, where's Dinah? Because you think they would ask where their daughter is. So it's either the same day or a couple days, a servant went and said, I have to tell you something. Your daughter is with Shechem. Why is she with Shechem? Well, she's no longer a virgin. And then Jacob held his peace. Now it says also that Hamor, the father, came to him to speak about that. And that's a natural thing. The father comes to speak to the father to arrange a marriage. But they did it backwards. This is what this is like. What he did is like what we would do, or what gypsies do when they don't want a wedding, let's say. The two couples come together and they decide to, quote, run away. So the guy will pick up the girl at a set time. Someone may help them and they run away. Once they run away, it's assumed they already had sex. So the next thing to do is still you come together and you work out the deal. Some people do that because they don't want a wedding. Some people do that because the father will not give his daughter, and that's the last way to do it. You run away with the daughter, but they don't have to still give her. But for the sake of peace, they would do that. So he did it reversed. He took her, he slept with her, in essence ran away with her. And it's the same thing that happens in our culture as well. But he held his peace because his sons were out in the field. And of course they're angry. And it says here the men were angry. Here's another thing we have to remember. Here's all the kids of Leah. So there's Reuben, Simeon, and Levi. Simeon and Levi are the two main brothers that we're going to be talked about here. There's Judah, Issachar, Zebulun, and of course there's Dinah. So those are the family members of Dinah, and the men were angry. It's safe to say that all the sons of Jacob were angry about what happened. But specifically, Levi and Judah are the ones who are going to, seems like, put the plan together. And since I put this up, now I have to explain something. You're looking at the 12 children of Israel, but then also you see Joseph and Benjamin. You see the 12 tribes. But you have to take out Joseph and you take out the Levites, and then you have the 12. Because the Levites' portion was the Lord. Remember, they were to serve God. So that's why you have Manasseh and Ephraim. And Joseph is represented by his two sons. Okay? We're good? So, verse 8. But Hamor spoke with them, saying, the soul of my son Shechem longs for the daughter, for your daughter. Please give her to him as wife and make marriages with us. Give your daughters to us and take our daughters to yourselves. So you shall dwell with us and the land shall be before you. Dwell and trade in it and acquire possessions for yourselves in it. So here the father speaks now and he says, please give her to wife to us. Let's make a deal. A lot of cultures would do that, but this is a different circumstances. They marry off each other to grow stronger and to make peace. This is also part of it. And when we see here, they don't talk about what happened because it's known. you don't see Shechem or Hamar saying, I'm so sorry for what I did. It's almost a given. The deed is done. Now we got to move on. There, again, an apology is something sometimes that we would do. But here they're dealing with the situation. Our culture, when it's found out that people run away, the next step is we got to gather. We know it's wrong. What are you going to do to fix it? So he's coming respectfully by saying, of course, please give your daughter to us. But the dad is speaking to them and he's trying to make a deal. Verse 11. Then Shechem said to her father, I'm sorry. Okay, yes, the father spoke. Then Shechem said to her father, being Dinah's father, Jacob, the son is speaking now, and her brothers, let me find favor in your eyes, and wherever you, whatever you say to me, I will give. Ask me ever so much dowry and gift, and I will give according to what you say to me. But give me the young woman as a wife. So here, the son is speaking now. Now, generally, we wouldn't do that in our culture because you shouldn't speak. It would be disrespectful. But again, he was a prince. And he says, let me find favor in your eyes, or rather, give me grace or acceptance, because that's what the word translates to. So to the degree, sort of like an apology. In other words, yes, I didn't do it right, but let me find favor and acceptance. And he says two things here. He wants a dowry and a gift. We know there is a dowry that you give for a bride. What happens when you run away in my culture? That there's a penalty fee along with the bridal fee. So you ran away with the virgin daughter. You didn't do it right. What's called, in my language, is called like a globa. If the family decides not to give her, you're still going to pay something to us for doing this to our daughter. And if you don't, there's a lot of chaos that can happen. But he's asking, basically saying, I'll give you even more. So it's two things. It's almost like a penalty and a dowry. He says, I'll give you whatever. That is how much I love her. And we have to remember that. He's saying he loves her. He did wrong. But he wants to try to make it right. He said, whatever you want. Verse 13. But the sons of Jacob answered Shechem and Hamor, his father, and spoke deceitfully because he had defiled Dinah, their sister. Now remember, it says here Jacob's sons. But like we talked about, it was probably more than likely, the two brothers who came up with the plan. It says they spoke deceitfully. Remember the history of Jacob. Remember the history of their family. Deception was part of their family. Their uncle was deceptive. It's natural and it's sort of normal to the culture to keep back what you really think. Once again, my culture does the same thing. I could be friendly to your face, later on I'm going to go kill you. It's just like the Italians do. They pretend it, but they spoke deceitfully. And they grew up in that way. Jacob is pretty silent in all of this. He continues to hold his peace, and he allows his sons to make the agreement. But remember, they spoke deceitfully. Now, what would you do if something happened like this? Would this even happen? Someone has your daughter, you find out they had sex. They wouldn't come to you and say, oh, we're so sorry, can we get married? Well, it's a different way. You have to understand the extreme dishonor that they've just placed on Israel and their daughter. Of course they're deceitful. They're coming up with a plan. And we can't understand how severe this is because you're talking about honor. If you look at Islam right now, or if you look at the samurai back in the day, if you talked wrong or if you said a word wrong, there goes your head. Both cultures, because you've dishonored. So their mindset is sort of like this. It is very wrong to do this, and it's still wrong to do this in other countries. So we have to understand their mind. I'm going to pretend, I'm going to be deceitful, of course. And that's what they're saying. They spoke deceitfully. So what do they want them to do? 14. And they said to them, we cannot do this thing, to give our sister to one who is uncircumcised, for that would be a reproach to us. And we don't know who actually spoke. It seems like maybe they had turns. We don't know. Verse 15. But on this condition, we will consent to you. if you will become as we are, if every male of you is circumcised, then we will give our daughters to you, and we will take your daughters to us, and we will dwell with you, and we will become one person. But if you will not heed us and be circumcised, then we will take our daughters and be gone. So they come up with a good plan. Remember, they're being deceitful, and there's no mystery here. I'm pretty sure everyone here knows what's coming next, right? Is there anyone who doesn't? We know what's coming next, but they did a plan. A lot of people do this. They could give their daughters and then later on take them or do some crazy stuff. I think we'll wait for that later on, but they're coming up with a good plan because they are very angry. I'm emphasizing the dishonor because to us what they're doing is an extreme thing. To the degree it is. But look at us today. We're totally opposite now. There's always a balance that we need to find. And it seems like it's hard for us because of, remember we talked about how we have two trees? That sin nature and that nature of God in us when we come to know it. But we're always having extremes. We see that in the world, right? Look at all the extremes that things started off right. And I'm going back to the women's lib. It started out right and good. They were being abused. They couldn't vote. But as everything goes, when you have the pendulum swing, it goes too far. And then we take advantage. We will always, if you give us an inch, we will always take a yard. We will never be satisfied. When we want have freedom, we want more freedom. The Israelites are no different than we are. We're Christians. There were Israelites back then. That's why we have to guard ourselves. But they came up with a good plan, and if you remember, Jacob's mother had good plans. Jacob went with the plan. It's a family affair. It's a thing in their life that still there's issues. There's angers. There's so many kids that it seems like Jacob failed in a way when it came to all his children. Even though he wrestled with God. Even though he's going to take God and he's going to be the only God to him and the rest of the family. There's still so much going on. In there. And we see this. They're coming up with a plan to do something really bad. Verse 18. I'm sorry, I don't think I explained it. Yes, some people do. They give their daughters and then later on they'll come into the house, smash the house up, take back their daughter in different cultures. They'll do it sometimes for the money. Not saying they're doing it, but sort of they did. Verse 18. And the words pleased Hamor and Shechem, Hamor's son. So the young man did not delay to do this thing because he delighted in Jacob's daughter. He was more honorable than all the household of his father. And that just means more respectable because clearly he wasn't honorable on what he did to Dinah. But he was more respected in the house of his father is what it's saying. And when you see what's going on with him, he didn't delay. He truly loved her. He truly wanted to be with her, but there's always consequences to her actions. You never know what someone's going to do if you don't do it the right way. Remember, God's law of causality. It's here. It affects us all. Verse 20. And Hamor and Shechem, his son, came to the gate of their city and spoke with the men of their city, saying, "These men are at peace with us." So he starts off by saying, okay, everything's okay. They weren't sure. When we go talk, when these two fathers meet, we don't know what they're going to do. But now he's comforting the people and say, listen, they're at peace with us. Somehow I guess they knew. Maybe they prepared the city for battle. But they said they're at peace with us. Continuing in verse 21. Therefore, let them dwell in the land and trade in it. For indeed, the land is large enough for them. Let us take their daughters to us as wives, and let us give them our daughters. Only on this occasion will the men consent to dwell with us, to be one people, if every male among us is circumcised as they are circumcised. Will not their livestock, their property, and every animal of theirs be ours? Only let us consent to them, and they will dwell with us. Now here you see Shechem convincing them by selfishly saying, listen, let's do this thing. You know, everything they have is going to be ours. So don't worry about it. Isn't this a good deal for you people? And of course, they say they go along with it. But also, These are some strong people. You're talking about adults. Every male in that village is going to be circumcised. How much did he actually have where they could look and say, wow, Jacob has a lot of stuff. No problem, cut me. Because you're talking about pain. And that's an oddity when you think about that. I mean, they're willing to do that. And of course, they listen to him because he's the most honorable. This guy's honorable. He's respectable. He knows what he's talking about, even though he did something that he shouldn't have, contrary to Israel and what they wanted. But was this God's plan? Did God want them to marry these daughters? Did he want them to intermingle? And we're not sure, because where would they go? Where would Jacob's kids find their wives? Where would Dinah find her husband? You can't go back to your uncle because you had a lot of problems. We do know they made a pact to say, you know what, if we do cross each other, we're not going to be in strife. But they don't know where, if they're ever going to go back to visit their uncle. They're now in the land of Canaan. Jacob probably told them everything and talking about, okay, here's where we are. We're going to settle here. The only places that you can find wives is in that area. So he seems it was a good idea. Once again, Jacob isn't saying anything. Notice how Jacob is quiet. The Bible doesn't say he says anything so far. So in verse 24, and all who went out of the gate of the city heeded Hamor and Shechem his son. Every male was circumcised, all who went out of the gate of the city. Now it came to pass on the third day, when they were in pain, that the two sons of Jacob, here's the two that are named. Oh, I said the wrong name, didn't I? Simeon and Levi. No, I did say the right thing. Simeon and Levi, Dinah's brothers, each took his sword and came boldly upon the city and killed all the males. And they killed Hamor and Shechem, his son, with the edge of the sword, and took Dinah from Shechem's house and went out. So it's Simeon and Levi, like I said earlier, seems that they came up with a plan because they're noted here. But they didn't do this on their own. We don't know how many other brothers took place of this. We don't know how many of the servants actually helped out because you have to kill all the males there. And then the question remains, where was Reuben? The eldest son has the responsibility to keep the honor of the family and even the honor of the sister. But they must have come up with a plan to do this, and see, it was a great plan. Now, how did they know this plan would work? Well, they were circumcised. They know the pain and fevers that could come upon you on the third day of circumcision. Now, we're not talking modern circumcision here. You didn't have any Tylenols or, you know, anti-inflammatories or anything that to release your, what is it, your fevers? You're sickly and you're healing. And he came and did this. When you think about what is going on here, and you think about this circle of violence, it also could be that maybe they were the one in their personalities who were more prone to act more violently. The other ones were more quiet. No one tried to stop them. Everyone just said, sure, let's do this. But of course, it gets worse than that. Here is Hamor and Shechem. What did Dinah do seeing all this? Because she was there. She was in the house. We read that she was there. How did she feel being in the middle of it? And remember, she didn't have much that she could say. A woman's voice wasn't worth much back then. Whoops, weren't much back then. So, hold on, let me make sure this is good. Okay, a woman's voice wasn't worth much back then. Let me make sure I'm in the right place. Okay. Right there. So they killed all the men, and they took Dinah out of the house, and they went home. Again, you don't hear Jacob, of course, because he's going to go. Verse 27, the sons of Jacob came upon the slain and plundered the city because their sister had been defiled. They took their sheep, their oxen, and their donkeys, and what was in the city and what was in the field, and all their wealth. All their little ones and their wives they took captive, and they plundered even all that was in the house. Now this is something that is crazy. And think about what they're doing right now. Jacob just got through wrestling with God, having God's favor, having peace with his brother. thinking that he can settle in this land, finally having peace. But it seems like there's, again, what we do can come back to bite us somehow. Where was the fault of Jacob in this, on what he did or didn't do? Because again, he's learning who this one God is. He's learning how to change the way they do things. But his sons slaughtered everyone, and not only that, took the kids, took everything. Going back to what gypsies and other cultures can do sometimes, if they have a daughter. Bring my daughter back. If you don't, I'll destroy your house. Molotov cocktails. You go looking for them. I was part of that also, but there was no murder and nothing like that. That's how bad it gets. And you can't understand it unless you're in that culture. Because to us that sounds, these people are crazy. Well, there is an ignorance there. There's a lack of understanding, a lack of compassion. And we would never do anything like that. But it still happens in the world. There was a story about a father who, in Islam, a father who killed his daughter. Because I think she wanted to leave Islam. And she was talking, I think, to people who weren't, and he killed her, and it still happens. Now, that's insane. That's ridiculous. But not if you're in that religion. You have to keep the family honor and their God. And other Islam people, obviously in the Middle East, would say, yes, you did a good thing. That's exactly what you're supposed to do. And that's what they're doing here. But that is a lot of destruction going on. This wasn't God's intent for Israel and their sons. But there was some fault going on here. Some sinful nature still in them. And Jacob, for whatever reason, didn't do anything. Did he not know? Possibly he was away. They snuck out at night. You would assume the attack happened at night when everyone's sleeping. But it all started off with Dinah. And what she went through and having friends. And it reminds us that even in today's time, we're not as severe as these people. We don't hold on to our daughters as much or sons. And a lot of times people say a son has more rights than a daughter does. I know in my culture that's the way it was, but it isn't fair. Dinah started going out, and all this happened just because she made some friends and someone fell in love with her. And it does teach us something, that we got to watch over our children. We got to ask questions. We got to be in their lives. We got to understand what they're doing, because we never know what could happen. And you're talking about maturity as well. You're talking about passion, the heart. Anything can happen. Today it's really different. It's accepted. Go do whatever. Sometimes, you know, you don't bring the guy, because it's the one we're talking about, a guy. The old days, come and meet the father, let's sit down, you know, we're watching each other. But even today, in the church, dating goes too far. And then the next thing you know, there's unwed pregnancies. And that's as far as it can go. But if you were living in another country where they're very strict, it would be something like this. Who was it? I think I said this. It was Steve Jobs. Did I say the story about Steve Jobs last week when he talked about the school? Steve Jobs said in an interview back in 1995, and of course Steve Jobs is liberal, he said why the public school system and the kids in there are not learning and it's failing. He said because the customers have left. Well, who are the customers? The parents. The parents no longer care. They're no longer going to the PTA meeting. And women started working when their children were young and they weren't going. So they left the state to run the kids and they took more control of the kids. And that's what happens when parents are not involved in their children's life. Dinah should have been guarded a little bit more. And none of this would have happened. All this destruction. Jacob and Leah should have spent some more time with her. Should have asked. But again, that's the culture. There's a deception in there. They were probably going out, meeting the people and saying, oh yeah, go out with your friends. Not realizing they could have been a bad influence to Dinah. They don't know if they were going back and forth between messages. forgetting where they were coming from, forgetting that she had 12 brothers, basically, and they fell into this issue. And again, it'll always go back to us parents. And I'm a parent too. And being a parent is difficult because we don't always get it right. And there's consequences to our actions or lack of. And when you look at what happened to Dinah, when you look at what the brothers did, it'll have to go back to Jacob because he is the patriarch, he is the father. What did he tell him and not tell them? And again, he had two wives. It wasn't his fault. He wanted the wife he wanted. He could have just stuck with Leah. And then he had two other women that he could have said no, but he didn't. See, we never know when we'll have to pay or our wages for what we did will come to us. Even if God is with us. I told you my story when the Lord said, sorry, this is going to happen to you, but I'll be with you. This is a big destruction that's happening right now. All the city died. Everyone's gone. And Jacob doesn't say anything until now. Verse 30. Then Jacob said to Simeon and Levi, you have troubled me by making me obnoxious among the inhabitants of the land, among the Canaanites and the Perizzites. Perizzites. And since I am few in number, they will gather themselves together against me and kill me. I shall be destroyed, my household and I. But they said, should he treat our sister like a harlot? So here's Jacob finally saying something. And what does he say? What have you guys done? Now they're going to destroy us. Well, Jacob, where were you before? How come you didn't counsel them then? Did they deceive their father as well? And that's the thing we don't know. They probably did deceive him. Maybe he would have said no after what he went through. Maybe he did talk to them. But there's the issue that we still continue to struggle with today. What is it what we started with? What's the issue we all have? Communication. Communication continues to be a thorn in all of our sides. We don't know how to communicate. People don't know how to communicate to us. We don't take the time to understand someone. We don't take the time to sit down with family members, kids, and understand each other. And when we don't, destruction happens. We're all dysfunctional. But again, with Christ, is there always hope for restoration, even in situations like this? What's the word? Yes or no? Yes. So amen to that. You never give up with Christ. He can undo the things we do. All things work out for the good. And that's the hope we have. But Jacob right here only says that. Oh man, you messed up my life. He was a little self-centered when he was saying this. There's nowhere in there that says, you know what, children? I should have taken some more time with you. We should have watched Dinah more. We shouldn't have been so self-centered and doing the things we wanted to do and watched over your little sister. To a degree, it's my fault and I'm sorry. How are we going to do this? How can we change it? The damage is done. But just because the damage is done, we're going to see that God is still with him. God is still with Jacob and even these sons that seem rotten and did a big sin. And you can't make a mistake that God says, yeah, I wanted you to do this stuff. Because it's still murder. And they went too far. And God understands little by little they're changing. Now, what's the big picture? We really don't know. But we know God's going to say, okay, it's time for you to get out of here. But he says, should they treat our sister like a harlot? Should they defile her, defile our name and our honor and our sister, and then treat her like a harlot by paying us money for her afterwards? That's not the way it's supposed to be done. If they were so good and he feebly loved her, why didn't he come and ask for her hand? Poo on them. That's basically how they're saying this. What does Jacob say after this? Well, nothing, because the Bible doesn't say anything. It seems like he just took it. And what was he thinking? Did he think in his mind that he played a part in this? And you see, Jacob has a tendency not to speak when he should. He has a tendency to still play favorites. And that can be a weakness in us. We don't speak up when we should. Sometimes we're too gracious to our family, our kids. We let them go too far because we love them. But hey, love corrects. I mean, all we have to do is know when Jesus corrects us, God corrects us. What does it say? Hey, I love you. Ah, he chastised me. The Bible says that. We know that. But even if, as parents, we made mistakes and it seems like destruction happened with our kids, one was defiled, the other is murdered, God could still change it. But again, we have to be the ones to be the example. To this point, Jacob still wasn't an example, even though God is with him. And we all know that this is the beginning of Israel understanding who this God is. It's still going to take thousands of years, I think so, for them to really get to the point where they have the law and understand his God and start following him somewhat and sometimes. But we don't want to be like that, and that's what we learned from here. They made mistakes. There's a lot of destruction. They took everyone captive. We don't know if they sold them or not, but all of this was not God's will. If only Jacob. It still hinges upon Jacob, if only we. But remember, with Christ, we can change if we really want to. And it takes work to talk to our kids, to talk to our loved ones. Whoever it is, it takes work and ask God, what should I do? What should I not do? How do I invest more time in my family? How do I invest more time in understanding how to talk to my family? It's pretty simple. Start by saying, let's talk. And God will do the rest. Well, let's pray.